is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis, Russia crisis, Iran crisis, all one. The news from London. Iranian president gives full support to Putin in call. The read. Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi, a.k.a. the hanging judge, gave, quote, his full support to Vladimir Putin during a telephone call, according to the Kremlin, 2 days after what is characterized as an aborted mutiny in Russia. The quote from the Kremlin spokesperson. The Iranian president has expressed his full support for the Russian leadership in connections with the June 24th events. Further, according to an Iranian official characterizing the phone call, President Putin explained the events related to the failed mutiny and insisted that such incidents cannot affect Russian sovereignty. I welcome Thaddeus McCotter, my colleague and co-host, and we welcome Malcolm Honlein of the Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. He's traveling. He's in Israel in the Middle East. Malcolm, the Iran threat to Israel, the Russian threat to NATO, and you'd have to say right now the unknown threat to Russia by dissenting elements, some of them armed, are all one story. Iran's conduct and its linking to Russia, does this indicate that Iran has a stronger hand now that Putin needs support from Raisi? Good evening to you, Malcolm.
Good evening to you and to John. Welcome back, John. Thaddeus, to the program. It's a very good question, and it's one that's being debated by experts all over about what the impact will be on the Iranian-Russian relationship dependency and also their activities, both joint and conflicting activities in the region. And we could look at various aspects of this to understand why, for instance, Russia is stepping up its airstrikes in Syria very seriously, especially around the area of Idlib, where they have an Air Force base, and it's, you know, the naval base that we've discussed many times at Tartus. But that means that they have a lot of planes right near Idlib, and they have been bombing, in fact, called the first massacre by Russian airstrikes this year. And so why the timing while this internal struggle was going on inside Iran is creating a lot of speculation about what is the goal of Russia, whether to send a negative message to Iran not to take advantage of this situation and expand its activities in Syria, because Russia and Iran, while they work together with Turkey through the Astana process, are really competing with one another in the country. So as with everything else, we see the great power conflict gets taken into it. The United States recently sent F-22s to the Middle East because of Russia's increasingly provocative actions, as they're called, using its aircraft to fly over U.S. forces in eastern Syria. And supposedly there were at least 25 airstrikes in the Idlib area, which is very considerable, noting that it's not such a huge territory. And they targeted really weird sites like a vegetable stand and other things, that places that would not be normal targets for Russian strikes. So the question is being raised, and I spoke already today to people who are looking at this. Are they looking at what will Russia do now in the aftermath? Will they step up the military aid? Could they provide S-400 anti-aircraft to Iran? Could they start to use the equipment that is being shipped to re-engineer it, American equipment, which is a great fear on the part of the Israelis, that equipment that we send is not monitored enough and that it's falling into the hands of Iran? And will that then also enable Russia, as they are with the drones, to benefit from Iranian military technology? So, and there are many other ramifications of this that we could talk about, but we're seeing how in each of the areas of that Iran is becoming more aggressive. Iran is boasting, by the way, of a new destroyer in the Caspian Sea, which obviously also relates to Russia. And as you know, that they're shipping the drones this way through the Caspian to Russia. But the Diamina destroyer, which supposedly, according to reports that they have put out, has anti-ship cruise missiles and 76 millimeter guns and other equipment, more advanced equipment, to advance their position to take a more aggressive position in the Caspian, and especially to counter countries like Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, and to a certain, of course, with the, it's a landlocked sea, but it's a major shipping point for oil going to Europe and other parts. So there are so many aspects right now that I think are of great concern. And the manifestations, whether it's, you know, with an Iranian group, a terror cell acting in Cyprus and planning an attack, which because of the joint cooperation of a number of security agencies, we're able to follow. And the Cypriot security forces seem to have done a great job. They work with the Mossad and with U.S. and other sources. But this is and the arrest of a number of Pakistani individuals who were involved in an attempted attack on an Israeli in Istanbul, Turkey. The many things that are coming together, seeing that Iran is expanding its activities. And at the meantime, the reports of the U.S. negotiations become of greater and greater concern.
Thaddeus, you have a question.
Yes. Can you give us more details about the Iranian plot in Cyprus, Malcolm?
Yes. So this is important because they were going to target not only a Jewish Chabad synagogue and individual Jews and Israelis who were doing business in Cyprus, and some of whom lived in Cyprus, but also hotels, entertainment venues, those frequented by Israeli tourists and others. And in addition, we know Greek intelligence arrested those Pakistanis who were going to carry out attacks in Greece. So it's a much broader plot than might generally be acknowledged in the media reports, which are very precursory about it. But it means that they invested a lot of money, a lot of time in planning and plotting this attack, which was to have been carried out. And hopefully, for their from their perspective, destroy the tourism, but also drive wedges between Israel, Cyprus, and Greece, who are working together today in really an exemplary fashion. And we know that Iranian intelligence assets and IRGC operatives have impersonated students and businessmen in order to entrap Israelis. And the Turkey actually said that Mossad located the targeted Israelis and flew them to Israel in private planes. So it's a region-wide problem, and it just tells you that no matter how much you think you can negotiate with Iran, they remain a terrorist entity.
Malcolm, the last time we spoke, Hamas was launching terror attacks on the West Bank paid for by Iran. Has that continued?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, we're seeing more and more of these terror attacks. The numbers are quite astounding to see how many acts of violence actually have taken place and are taking place. We get a very one-sided report. Most of them are in the Jenin area, and then it's spilled over to Nablus. And these, they have improved their explosive charges that they use against the Israeli military, and sometimes mobilize dozens, even of hundreds of gunmen to engage in battles. And yet it's always portrayed that as if Israeli soldiers are going in against the civilian population, when we know that's not true, that they have invested heavily through the IRGC and close cooperation with Hezbollah to build West Bank workshops for assembling rockets of the types manufactured in Gaza. And even short-range rockets would constitute a danger because this is right near Israel's heavily populated areas. So they're trying, Hamas and other groups are trying to flood the West Bank with weapons and with money to enable their local groups to arm themselves, to select targets. And weapons are coming through Iraq, through Jordan, through Lebanon, Syria, and it poses a real challenge to Israel's security agencies.
Thaddeus, you have a question.
Yes, Malcolm, there was a recent poll of Jordanians. What are some of the results that you find most interesting?
Well, frankly, I found them quite disturbing, although we saw some very positive comments coming out of leaders in Morocco, even though the N7 meeting was postponed. But we saw how the Palestinian Authority and Fatah and others glorified the Egyptian border guard who killed those three young Israeli soldiers in an unprovoked attack that was condemned even by Egyptians. They set up mourning tents to honor the martyrs. And it reflects what young Palestinians increasingly reject, a two-state solution to the conflict, according to recent studies. And the youth discontent is largely driven by lack of legitimacy in their own political system. 80% want the government gone, and it has been a consistently growing number. So support for armed confrontation amongst 18 to 29-year-olds is the highest, over 56% favoring a return. And then we saw similar numbers in Jordan. And it reflects the fact that the governments are not doing a lot to really translate the idea of peace to the people. In Morocco, there's been efforts. UAE, there have been efforts. And you see there somewhat of a decrease. But when in all of these instances, when we see the numbers of the polls, and you know, you can dismiss these statistics and as less important, but the fact is that when 76% of Jordanians agree in case of an earthquake or disaster, they should refuse humanitarian aid from Israel, meaning that they're willing to punish themselves, let alone 84% of Jordanians oppose having business deals with Israel, though they benefit very greatly from it. And Jordan's economy is contingent in a large degree on the aid from Israel and trade with Israel.
Mr. Malcolm, you report there's a Hezbollah camp inside the sovereignty of Israel. Why, and what is the UN doing about it?
The UN is doing what they normally do about things, which is just about nothing. Although it took them a long time, they finally acknowledged the existence of this base inside Israeli territory across the border from Lebanon. They moved and set up tents. And supposedly equipment is nearby, though not in the immediate area. So Israel doesn't feel that it doesn't pose immediate threat, but it's not a tolerable situation where you can let a terrorist organization continue to set up along its across its border in territory that the UN acknowledges. You know, there is no agreed upon border, but there is an international line which is considered the legitimate boundary. And that was crossed by Hezbollah. And I've seen the pictures, and now the media is showing some of the pictures of this. So it's not a question of dispute. It took a long time for the UN even to get their forces there to check out the site. And as you know, three of the UN soldiers were arrested for selling liquid cocaine and drugs in the last 2 or 3 days. But they didn't send them there. They don't move those forces. And you, John, saw them yourself when you see them in the camp, and they never leave it when we were on the Lebanon border. That unfortunately is the case. And now we have this provocation, which hopefully can be resolved peacefully.
We need good news. That is?
Yes, the good news comes by way of Greece. There was a big election victory there.
There is a big election victory, and a man who has played a critical role, Mitsotakis, in fostering the Greece-Cyprus-Israel cooperation. I've met with him many times in Greece and here in the United States. He's a reformer, and it seems there was a two-round election. In the first one, no one got a majority, but now in the second one, which is held under a different electoral system, it seems that he will get a majority of the 300-seat parliament and will be able to form the next government. And under this system, he gets bonus seats for the party that wins the most. It's a little complicated procedure, but I think the result is one. He had stepped down, if you remember, a couple months ago. And then that was the disastrous boat incident and the train wreck that I think happened while he was still in office. And the economic strains are great. And I think people are looking to him again to continue the reforms and the moderate policies that he instituted.
Malcolm Hohenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Raisi's phone call with Vladimir Putin, leading to more anxiety in the region about what comes next in Syria. Remember, Russia's actively involved in combat in Syria right now. Thaddeus McCotter, American Greatness. We're going to the Dusty One in a moment. I'm John Batchelor.